Hey there, this is Joseph Pope III and Jeff Daisy from the Night Sweats, Nathaniel Ratliff and the Night Sweats.
The exact.
These are Verbal Shenanigans, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to your weekly installment of Verbal Shenanigans Podcast. For those of you just tuning in, I am Scott, and Mike is down there in between 5Ks, from what I understand.
Yep, it's a double 5K day down here in Georgia, my friend.
So. Double 5K. So, we'll get to that in just a second. So, guys, if you're just tuning in, this is Verbal Shenanigans. We are a weekly podcast that releases every Monday for the most part. We've been getting better at coming back. We took had a couple clunky weeks there for a while, but we're, you know, the fall rolls around and we swing back into our schedule like most normal people do.
Yeah, the humidity interferes with our scheduling capabilities.
Correct.
You know, it's the barometrics and storm systems, and you got to factor in the hail when you do a podcast.
Right,
that's the key thing. That's why so many podcasts failed.
Not to mention these hurricanes. They're really affecting our ability to, I don't know, do things.
Did you? Yeah, I just want to tell the people of Alabama, I'm glad that you are safe.
But so each week we bring on an interesting guest. We have pretty much gone a couple years straight now with a guest on each week. And if we don't start scheduling, that might come to an end in the next couple weeks here. But today's a good one. We also just talk about life and banter and play stupid games. And that's kind of the show here. We're a little bit of a variety show, I guess you could say.
A potpourri of vocalness, if you will.
Vocalness? Did you just create a word?
I think vocalness technically is a word.
Vocalness? All right, I'm going to have to look this up. Vocalness. the quality or state of being vocal.
There you go. See? Not everything that comes out of my mouth is made up. Sometimes it's actually been documented.
Yeah,
it's rare. So, I was thinking vocalness was Loch Ness Monster's like cousin or something.
Vocal Nessie.
Yeah.
So let's jump into this. So you're in between 5K. So you went from essentially not running at all to now doing two races in one day.
That is correct. Our official first 5K. Well, I mean, we run on the tracks and we do 3-4 miles all the time, so we'd done 5Ks, but the official group race, the first one came on this past Monday, the Labor Day. That one was a little hard to get through. It wasn't hard in the sense of the actual run. It was just it was in Atlanta, so we had to set the alarm for 4 something in the morning.
Yeah.
And I did some strength and conditioning training on 2 days before, and I was still feeling it. You know the guy's good when you find muscles that are sore. Like, I had inside the hip muscles that were nagging me, and it was to the point where I had issues lifting my leg to let go of my clutch to shift while it's driving. Like,
well, you got
to. It was
a
weird.
You know, if you're getting good enough shape, you could possibly try out for the Raiders. They might have an opening in their wide receivers slot soon.
That is true. I don't do any cryogenic stuff, so my feet are fine. So
you see what that idiot did this morning?
It's been so back and forth. Like, for what I understand, like, yesterday he had, like, this tearful apology where they announce he's back on the team. And now, for what I understand, he's saying, cut my rear end.
Yeah, yeah. He also released a recording of a phone call him and Gruden had with, like, emotional music in the back. So, literally, Gruden's like, hey, you know, like, you're getting bad press. We want you on the team. We want you to be part of that. He's basically saying all good things. And Gruden, you know, has to be chomping at the bit. Like, this guy is ridiculous, but he could also be a game changer. But, like, he's such a prima donna. I don't know what it is about the wide receiver position, man. It is just the cast of lunatics.
Well, I mean, for starters, you know Gruden's in the back of his head saying, was this $100 million really worth leaving the ESPN? Was it?
Yeah,
All I did was say Spire 2 wide banana every week, and everybody thought I was a genius, and they loved me. And now I'm coming back to this. I'm coming to the team that's the most dysfunctional. The stadium is pure garbage, and they still have to pray that Vegas will be ready for next year, or they're back in there.
Yep.
They don't really know if they have a fan base when they go there. And, I mean, the owner is still as wackadoo as their father was. And then on top of it, this whole scenario, it's unbelievable. Like, I look at my Redskins and I shake my head, and I can still literally say, well, we're not the Raiders.
It's just, if you're the Raiders, like, so they're going to terminate his $29 million signing bonus, and they could just hold him in purgatory. And that's exactly what I would do. Do not cut it. Now he's tweeting that he wants to be released. Do not cut him. Let him just sit in the reserves and let him, you know, put him in timeout. But yeah, no one's bigger than the team. Like, we've seen this with Odell. We've seen this with Dez Bryant. We've seen this with you. I mean, we can go on and on. Ocho Cinco.
Now, there's rumors down here in Georgia that Julio Jones might not play week one since they didn't restructure his contract they promised. So,
and, I mean, you saw the stats last year they were putting out when all the OBJ stuff was going on, that you know, teams with these highest paid wide receivers never go to the Super Bowl, never win a Super Bowl. I think Julio Jones is the only one that made it to a Super Bowl in the last 15 years or something like that.
It's kind of funny when you think, like you're saying, how all these wide receivers are the prima donnas. Like, if any quarterback is prima donna like that, they're pretty much don't get a job, with the exception of the great experiment of who's our fun friend with the Browns that played in the AFF, Manziel.
Right.
He was the one trying to be prima donna, doing the money, kind of money hands, figures. Well, I don't know what you call the gesture, but I don't know. I mean, I guess it's one of those, I'm the one that they show in SportsCenter that says touchdown, so.
Right. But. It's football is the ultimate team sport, right? It takes so many moving parts. In basketball, maybe I get it, because you can be a prima donna, because you could literally dominate a game if you're that good as one person. But Antonio Brown, if you don't have a line, you don't have a quarterback, he's useless. So it's like, whatever, you know, just let him go. Or, I mean, don't let him go, but don't even worry about it. Yeah. They got to start pushing back.
You let him do all his Instagrams and Twitters and all that. Keep on crying. The longer you cry, the longer I hold you. And basically tank the season, get Tua, and then be like, all right, we're in a new stadium. We're in Vegas. Everybody's going to be watching us. Hey, prima donna, do you want to be a part of that?
Exactly. Hold on. Let me shut this dog up. Hold on. Yeah, sorry. It wouldn't be a podcast out without Obi just completely just staring at a trailer outside, just barking at it, just over and over. You would think when nothing changes, a dog would be like, all right, I'm done. You know,
Daddy, it's a long rectangle. I don't understand. Maybe if I yell at it, it will go.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, so sorry, we got off on a tangent. So yeah, so back to your race. So this is so you're going for two.
Yeah,
in one
day. Doing two today. Yeah, so the first one I got 31:38, and that was basically because I was uncomfortable. Also, I had to do it as I was driving. My contact was acting up, and I tried to shift it, and it fell out of my eye. So I was going half blind through the run. So I was just in the greatest mood humanly possible.
I just picture you like
tired, blind, everything.
I just picture you like bumping into people because you can't see. Like, oh, sorry. Oh, sorry.
Some guy from Kenya is trying to break his all-time marathon record. I trip him up. My bad. Oops, sorry. Maybe you can start over.
So but, a second race in a day, that's pretty tough.
Today was good. Got my best, literally my best 1K, my best mile, and my best 5K during the whole thing. I felt pretty good. It was kind of tough, really hilly, the roads that they use. I still got to work on some stuff because I got a good pace in the first 2 miles, especially when I'm in these races where I'm just the brain is like, well, I got to keep up with this group.
Mm-hmm.
But come 2 to 3, it's like, body's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, well.
What are you doing?
I mean, when you look at the grand scheme of things, you haven't been running that long. So it's pretty, you know, pretty impressive that you're even, you know, putting the times you are. And now you're trying to do a second one. So that's going to take a while.
This one's going to be more of a fun one. This is like a glow, kind of foam glow, they call it. I guess they're gonna put out foam and everybody's gonna be wearing neon, and it's gonna be at the racetrack down in Atlanta, so that's cool for me. So there's a lot of things that say, okay, they're not gonna really take this run seriously. You know, I don't think with people wearing like neon tutus that they're trying to break their all-time running record.
I say you show up in just a neon tutu and running sneakers and see what looks you get. Be like, I thought this is Atlanta. I thought we were allowed to do this.
I thought we were free, man. Come on. Don't be acting like the North.
Yep, yep.
You're better than that.
I'm almost jealous of the running because I am on week 5 here of ankle recoup, and we are not getting much better. Things are not changing.
All right. Has the grapefruit gone down to like a lime?
Here's the thing. My ankle does not. So I've been doing the PT and everything, and the ankle does not feel like weak. It doesn't really feel weak. It actually feels okay. But the swelling just continues. Like by the end of the day, when I'm done with work and I'm coaching, it's completely swollen. If I wear like a short sock, like on a sneaker, it's like all the fluid just sits like on top of it, and it just swelling continues. This week, it was the first time I really had to wear a dress shoe, and I don't know if it was because, like, you know, like it has a heel on the bottom and it was pointing a certain way, but my Achilles was just like on fire all day long. So it's kind of a bummer. It's like I want to like. Even not necessarily running or biking, or I would love to like move a little bit more. I mean, I've been going to the gym, but not like I haven't really been able to do any cardio because it's just like when you have one leg, it doesn't really work.
So when you dress up, so you got like a nice pair of $200 dress shoes, and then on top of it is a bunch of internal liquids top of your shoe.
First
just
off,
popping out.
This is me you're talking about. There's no such thing as a $200 dress shoe in my in my wardrobe. But
I thought you were Antonio Browning for this episode.
Oh, yeah.
You went to like the premier sneaker. He's like, if I'm going to talk about the best, I got to look the best on the Verbal Shenanigans podcast.
Yeah. So, like, even my dress sock, you could just see like you said, like a grapefruit kind of hanging out. And it's kind of like a. It's a mental thing, right? It's like I'm tired of being injured. Like I'm getting sick of it, you know. I'm starting to get like angry about it. Like, and I didn't ice as much and stuff as I could over this week, but still you're like, "Come on, body. Like we're 5 weeks." And physical therapist is like, "Well, this could be like an 8 to 10 week thing. This could be a 12 week thing." He's like, he told me I have the third worst ankle he's seen, which is wonderful coming from a physical therapist.
So this guy keeps a list.
Yeah.
And he's looking at, that is top 5.
Yep.
I don't know top 2. Man, you should have seen Billy. Oh,
I just picture like
Billy had a cankle, man.
He has like a Mount Rushmore thing on his wall, and there's my, like picture my nasty ankle. But
the most disgusting Mount Rushmore ever. And all. Now you literally have a reason not to go to South Dakota. The ugly ankle Mount Rushmore.
Now, I just came back today, literally maybe 15 minutes ago. I just got in and I was actually had to go to your old stomping ground. I was in Chester and and I told him, you know, it was a bad week, and he's like, ugh. So he did some work on me. We didn't do any exercise today. He just did a bunch of work and laser crap and I don't know, whatever. And he's
like, wait, what's the laser crap? Let's get into this a little bit.
He like told me to rotate my ankle, and he just takes out some, like, I don't know, it almost looks like one of those ear thermometers, kind of, and it's like hooked up to some machine, and he like presses some settings. He's like, look, just don't look at the light. You might feel a little heat every once in a while. I don't know. I didn't really feel much. It didn't hurt or anything, but it's supposed to break up some, you know, scar tissue and some swelling. I don't know.
Do you feel that they put on the wrong setting, you become the next cyborg?
I wish, because I could, you know, right now, like, I'm wishing I could, like, you know, maybe we're 25 years in the future here, and I could just, like, order a new beautiful 3D printed ankle that just comes and Amazon gets it to me. I just go down the street for installation, and 3 days later, I'm up and, you know, running marathons. Yeah.
I feel we're behind and stuff. I feel like a doctor should just be like, you know what? Just poke that grapefruit.
Dude,
let that juice flow out.
It is only a matter of time before, you know, it's like, why would I have this old birth ankle that I was born with? It's so behind. Like, I could get like a nice new titanium one with like Wi-Fi, and I'm a hotspot, you know, like.
I mean, we should be pretty close. I think that's somewhat part of the plot for the next Terminator movie, from what I saw. We can't beat the robot, so we just put machinery in our body, it looked like, for what I saw in the trailer.
Yeah. So yeah, it's becoming a mindset where I'm getting frustrated. Unfortunately, he said, like, I'm gonna go back Wednesday, and if there's no improvement, I gotta go for an MRI and an X-ray, and hopefully that's not a. I went for an X-ray when it first happened, and they saw nothing. But hopefully, hopefully I don't need to go any further than physical therapy, because that would not be fun. So.
Since we've had a few world record breakers on this podcast, have you thought about breaking the hopping 5K world record to get some exercise in there?
Well, sure. Yeah. That's generally what I've been thinking. You know, like I'm succumbing to life without one foot. So,
But it'd be a beautiful story, I feel, how you persevered over this injury that didn't keep you from your volleyball world title down at Lakeland.
Ugh.
But
I don't want to talk about it.
You persevered and you said, you know what, I'm gonna do it. Yeah. 5K style.
See, that's what I think is so frustrating, because maybe like from 2.5 weeks till now, I haven't really noticed any like major change, and I thought we were really getting somewhere, but I don't know. But let's get somewhere here. I think I'm very excited about our guest tonight. And I think it's a good time to segue into giving him a call. So there is a very, very well-known band. I'm sure you guys have heard the song Son of a Bitch or SOB. And they got two albums out there. They're definitely one of my favorite bands to come out in the last 10 years. It's got a really cool, soulful kind of throwback sound to them. And that is Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats. I actually got to see them about a year ago at the Apollo Theater. It was amazing. One of the best shows I've ever seen. I've been going back and forth and talking with their saxophone player, who I also, through kind of researching him, found out he did the sax playing on another one of my favorite artists, Leon Bridges. So, we're going to get Jeff Daisy on the line here, and, it should be a good interview. So,
no doubt.
So let's give Jeff a call. Jeff, first off, I want to thank you for, giving us a few minutes of your time here and talking to us, aficionados of music over here.
Hey. Yes, sir. My pleasure, man. Yeah, I like what y'all do.
Oh, thanks, man.
Thank you.
First off, I gotta, So you were calling you, and you were just getting out of a theme park or riding roller coasters. What's going on, man?
Yeah, man. So we were in Baltimore last night, and we're headed to Detroit. So we had to do a stopover travel day. We got a couple buses, and so the drivers, you know, needed to take like some time off after 8 hours of driving, and we stopped in Cedar Point, Ohio.
Nice.
I guess it's Sandusky, Ohio, but Cedar Point is the it's the second oldest theme park in the States, and it has most of like the baddest ass rides.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what's your go-to at an amusement park? I have to know. Is it just is it roller coasters? Is it like a free fall ride? What's your go-to?
Oh man, we rode several rides. These ones are all like super tall and super fast, and like they were great. The first one we did was kind of like a mine train type ride, which is cool. It's called the Maverick. It's pretty sweet.
That was my nickname in high school. So, you know. So let me ask you, like, was today like just pure downtime from I know you guys been touring like crazy. Like when you get downtime like that, do you spend time usually individually, or do you guys all kind of spend time together?
A lot of times we end up hanging out. This band is pretty close-knit. And I've played in a bunch of different bands, and this one in particular, like, if there's a day off, we're all hanging out usually.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
Yeah. Which is awesome, because a lot of times you need your own space, but everything just works out so well over here. We're all fortunate just to be able to hang out.
So, Jeff, looking into your career, like, I was – so when I went to try to, you know, got in touch with you many, many months ago, and we kind of been talking back and forth, I'm a big Nathaniel Ratliff and the Night Sweats fan, and, you know, constantly listen to music. But I also, like, as I dove deeper in your career, I can't believe you have played on some of my favorite albums, from Leon Bridges to Frank Turner, who was on this show. Where did you start as far as saxophone wise? Did you start like as like a lot of us start in like middle school or something, like picking it up, or did you have a teacher? Where did you start?
I started in Texas in sixth grade, so that's 12 years old,
right?
And it was just that's in Texas. That's when you started band, and I mean, honestly. I had two older brothers, and they both played clarinet. And so when it was my turn, I didn't want to do that because I was already
right.
I was already trying to like do my own thing. But I really wanted to play the saxophone based on some stuff I heard, like watching movies, really, like soundtracks. And so I started when I was 12, and I never really put it down at all. So. Every time I play a show, I kind of feel, you know, like I'm doing the same thing I've been doing since I was 12, like picking up that saxophone. And it's cool, but that was a long time ago.
right. So
you're saying you don't go home and jam with your brothers then playing clarinet is what you're telling us?
Well, you know what?
Not yet.
One of my brothers, I've played, he goes to church a lot. He plays in church, I've gone and done a couple church things with him where I'll just, you know, play saxophone. Sometimes he's playing saxophone too. But besides that, yeah, we don't really jam too much. But it's cool. It's cool when we do something, for sure.
And when you started with playing saxophone, I know you eventually you stopped touring, and then you went in to get a degree in music. Was it always an initial thought that you're eventually going to be like old professional, or were you kind of just having fun and tapering down where you're not going to
get an education and teach people how to play?
I was one of those kids that was just, you know, I saw my older brothers going to college, and that was just what was kind of told to you. It's like, okay, go try to get a scholarship, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I did that, and then I was like, okay, I got a scholarship. I guess I'll do music education. Because even when I was in elementary school, I remember thinking that being a teacher would be fun, you know? So literally I just kind of did it because, you know, I was like, I got to get this piece of paper and something. But about 1 year in, I decided that I did not want to teach, or not like as a band director, but private lessons, that stuff's fine. I love doing that, you know, but to actually apply at a school and get a band director, music director job. About a year into college, I realized that that wasn't for me, and I just wanted to play. Like, I don't know. It always seemed to me that the teachers were just telling us to learn or mimic some of these great other saxophone players. And I was like, well, what were those guys doing? I don't think they were trying to sound like anyone. They were just trying to be themselves. And so I immediately just kind of wanted to switch gears, right, and not be a band director.
So how did you, you know, you had a couple spots on albums before that, but how did you end up hooking up with, like, you are on Leon Bridges' Coming Home album, which is, I think it stands the test of time. I think it's phenomenal, and he's just such a great entertainer. How'd you end up working with him?
Thanks, man. We loved that record. That was so much fun.
It still comes up in the car every road trip with me and my wife. Like, we still put on, you know, The River and just a bunch of songs from that album. It's an amazing album.
Yeah, there's, I believe, some real gems on there that I've always loved. Mm-hmm. So Leon and I both came out of Fort Worth in that music scene. Mm-hmm. He's quite a bit younger than me. I think 9 years younger. And there was a place in our neighborhood. We both lived in the Fairmount neighborhood in Fort Worth. And there was a music venue in there that was kind of half music venue, half residential. So it had some loopholes.
Okay.
And so the music can go late, and, you know, we always had a good time. And someone had started a open mic up there. And I had been playing a residency gig up there every other Wednesday. And my friend Luke, who started the open mic, was like, hey, man, you got to come out. Like, everyone would dig it, you know, it'd be fun. And so I went out there, and I was like, okay, I'm going to sit in with somebody. And the first band went by, and I was just at the bar hanging out. And then Leon started. And at the time, he was going by Lost Child. That was like the band name.
Right.
So I went over there, and I kind of did the universal sign, like, hey, is it, you know, cool if I jump up and play saxophone?
Right.
I can't show you because it's audio, but
well, I'm picturing a lot of things. It could be anything.
Yeah.
It kind of looks like Adam Sandler, you know, when he does that thing. It's like,
all right. It's clear now. And, it's very clear.
Yeah. So yeah, I got up there and we played, and we just hit it off, and we just kind of, we were always working together from there all the way until he got invited to do a record with a guy named Austin Jenkins that I had already met earlier. And Austin and Leon called me like, hey, we're going to do this record. And that was it. It was literally open mics straight to that record. And then we released that record at the Scat Jazz Lounge in downtown Fort Worth. And then the next day we flew to New York to do the Tonight Show. It was like
ridiculous.
we were like, okay, what? You know, it was insane, but a whole lot of fun, and Yeah, I love Leon to death, and Austin as well. Like, and most of the band I had already known before that recording session. So it was really homegrown from that area.
The music coming out of Leon and you guys is just, it's just very refreshing. You know, like, that's all I can say. It's just like, wow, okay, like, you know, that's still, that sound is still there. Whatever that sound is, it's just that old-timey, soulful, you know, horns, and he could do. But then, like, the next song could be like a dance song. So it's really cool to kind of take a listen to those whole records, and there's a little bit of a different vibe in every single song. So it's pretty neat.
Yeah, I agree, man. I have my favorites from that record, yep. You know, personally. And I think that there's some stuff on there that does sound like very traditional.
It does.
But then, like, to me, like Smooth Sailing, mm-hmm. that I'm like, I don't know if I've heard anything like that.
It's true.
Exactly. You know? And yeah, I love that stuff. And that's kind of what we were up to. And, it was a good time. For a while there, I kind of felt like, you know, it was just me and Leon doing gigs together. Sometimes just, you know, the two of us, like, at a bar, or, like, at a roof party, you know.
Sick. Yeah. That's fun. Yeah,
it was super great.
I mean, when you hear, like, a new sound like that, is that just, like, instinct where you can just pop in and go, okay, I'm going to kind of play it like this? Or does it take you a few tries to kind of figure out a sound, how to, like, enhance the music?
It's always different. It kind of depends on the genre and just kind of the feel and vibe. I'm more of a rhythm and kind of vibe type musician. Like, that's the stuff that really catches my ear, or I really like tune into. I'm really just now in the last several years, like, really getting to know lyrics and checking that out, and you know what I mean?
Right.
And so with everything with Leon, though, like, I never really had to think about it. I just played how I wanted to. It was just very natural. Whereas some of the gigs I've done, I really have to kind of act a little bit, you know?
Right.
It's like, this song calls for some crazy 1980s saxophone stuff. I'm like, okay, yeah. Well, I need to put on this, you know, these sunglasses or whatever.
Yeah.
Sonically speaking, you know, it's like, but yeah, with Leon, I mean, it was all one take stuff. We were just doing what we had been hanging out and doing. Yeah, all that stuff was recorded live. There was very few overdubs in the whole thing.
Oh, that's pretty cool. How'd you hook up with Nathaniel?
Nathaniel. So, okay, I was out on the road with Leon, and kind of fairly early on, we were at a couple music festivals in, I want to say, England, and one of them was Citadel Fest. That's one. The other one, I think, was I forget. But
right.
We saw their show at one, and just because the drummer in my band, Rico at the time, Rico Allen, he was like, "Man, we should check this band out." And I hadn't heard of them, and I got to watch their show. And then I think the next night or the night after, some of them were hanging out side stage watching our show. And we took like some golf carts back to the bus area together, and we kind of met there. And then months later, the management groups had set up a co-headlining tour, and it was just two shows. But you know, it was Leon and Nathaniel, one in Virginia, and one in Kansas City. So at that point, like, we really got to hang out. And I remember looking at them one time and be like, "Man, it's like looking in a mirror. I feel like we got a lot of the same. We got a lot of the same records. Oh, you have dice in your backpack, also. Cool."
Yeah.
And I'll never forget. There was, I think the next time I saw him was after those two shows was at Lollapalooza, and Leon and Nathaniel were just back to back at two stages facing each other. And it's a sea of people in between the whole time. It was so cool.
Sick.
And then I was in Canada and I saw them running around the airport with their jackets that said International Dickweeds on it.
Nice.
And I got to get that jacket.
Oh, man. Yeah, they all still have them. And I just remember seeing them in that airport in Canada and just laughing my ass off. Like, dude, I want to hang out with those guys. anyway, that's how we met. And then a little bit later, I had asked the trumpet player from Nathaniel's band if he wanted to sit in with Leon when we came through the Fillmore in Denver. And because Wesley, the trumpet player, sat in, Nathaniel did too. And then
sick.
That was the first time we actually shared the stage. And yeah, we just kind of kept running into each other and sitting in. And then one day he was like, hey, man, you want a job? And
wow.
At the time, Leon was doing one, two, maybe three shows a month tops for like many, many months. And it just was at that point. I was like, yeah, man, I need to work. And it was great. I immediately like hit the ground running with him and ended up on his second record.
Yeah.
And also Leon's second record, so I kind of got stuck in there and ended up going with Nathaniel. I just felt like I was on that whole record, and you know, it felt like stability,
right,
was available, and that just hadn't been there in my life at any point ever with music.
I mean, that second record, let's be honest here. The first record is, I was like, wow, like there's no way they're going to be able to hit this again. And then the second record came out and I liked it. And then within a month and a half, I absolutely loved it. And it becomes, it's part of my, I got to say, every playlist I make, I'm putting on songs from it. And me and my wife went to your guys' show at the Apollo Theater. And it was we got to sit, I don't even know what you call them, with the little balcony. I don't know. I always say, like, you know, where like Abraham Lincoln sat, like the little extended balcony.
Yeah.
It was me, her, and just one other guy from India who knew your music from his father, who had been sending, like, he was like, oh, like, I love old rock music. Like, you guys should check them out. He fell in love with it during that week and got tickets. And it was like the three of us sitting there, kind of hovering over the stage. And that was like, I guess you guys had just released the album that week. And it was like the radio release of it was like one of the most phenomenal shows I've ever seen. And I just see what you guys are doing. It's got to be truly amazing for you.
It is amazing. I mean, none of us ever thought we would play the Apollo. I mean,
that show was awesome, by the way.
Oh man, that was a good time. And I know what you mean about that theater. It's like almost like four stories. They're shorter than normal stories, but
yeah,
there's all those different layers going up, and
it's so cool.
Yeah. Hey, so the bass player in the Night Sweats, Joseph Pope III, just walked in.
Oh, bring him on.
he's on the line.
Justin Pope.
Joseph Pope III, that's me.
Joseph Pope, I
asked for Joseph Pope Jr. I'm sorry, please leave the line.
Jr. Well, I have a son who's the fourth, and the poor bastard, you know, like the drop-down menus on the internet, they only go to three usually on the stuff on the category, so dang, he's screwed.
We're going to call freaking GoDaddy.com and get this fixed.
first off, thanks for sitting down with us, man. Like, I'm picture you in your sweet ass hat playing some ripping bass lines. but I know that you guys just got off a bunch of roller coasters. First off, how are you, man?
I'm good. I went upstairs when Jeff called you.
Oh.
I went upstairs to charge my phone and use the bathroom, and using the bathroom turned into a shower. You know, that happens sometimes. So I just got back. I'm fresh as a daisy, though.
First off, thanks so much for talking to us. I was just talking to Jeff about my wife and I. Let me preface it. We were huge fans of the first album. Could not imagine the second album being anywhere near it's almost become the second album is in our everyday playlist. But we were talking about the show at the Apollo Theater. We're kind of hovering over you guys in those little, again, I don't know what to call them, little balconies, I guess. It was three of us. It was one of the best shows we ever seen. And I just see what you guys continuously are doing. It's got to be an amazing ride.
It's definitely an amazing ride. And it's nice to hear you talk about the second record that way, because that record
meant a lot to us to make.
You know, we made that record after being on the road for years together and like changing as a band from traveling so much together. And that record, you know, no matter what the sales numbers are, you know, we really believe in that second record, and it's propelled us, you know, like we want to keep going. So here we are.
I mean, you look at where this band has gone. You're touring with Willie Nelson, you have the Preservation Jazz Hall Band, which it's just fun to talk to you, because I was there like 2 years ago just thinking about how cool like that show is, and all you guys are just doing really cool things. Is there like a goal with that, or are things coming to you guys naturally and you're just taking them, or do you guys seek out these opportunities that are just, I think they fit your band so well?
Well, I can speak to that. We just got to open for the Rolling Stones, and
who,
you
know, are they, an up and
coming
band?
The Rolling Stones. They're like a young Brit pop band.
Oh, gotcha.
Climbing the charts. But you know, you never, when you're a kid and you're playing music, you're learning how to play music, and you have these aspirations to play music. The way I talked about opening for the Stones, I'm like, never in my mind that it never crossed my mind to say like I want to open for the Stones someday. Like, it's just not a thing you say, you know. And so getting a chance to do it, and then to be so inspired by those guys, like Mick has given it everything he's got.
It's,
you know,
amazing.
It was very amazing to see them. You know, I'd never seen them before, and I wasn't sure what to expect, but it was very inspiring. But you know, these things kind of I think we just set out to try to take care of each other, and then we've been getting some really good opportunities coming our way.
Hey, with everybody you perform with and the place you've been, I mean, the Apollo, Jeff, I know you've done like the Sydney Opera House and Lollapalooza. Can you still get like almost like starstruck, or going to an event being like almost intimidated, or is it just natural nowadays?
Yeah, I mean, they're on the podcast with us, man. They're definitely like...
I didn't want to include that. That was an obvious answer as well.
No, I mean, it's funny. Over the years, you do kind of get used to some of it, which is fun and also just kind of strange. But then, for me personally, that Stones gig was in a whole other atmosphere, because I've never played a stadium. And then also the Stones, I mean, yeah, that's like what you would hear about in the 70s being like one of the biggest gigs available. It's like,
yeah, open for the Stones. It's still happening.
Yeah. It's insane. you know, cause so many others are gone. I mean, the bands are not around, but somehow against all odds, you know,
Keith Richards.
Yeah, they're still there, man. It's amazing. I felt very, very fortunate. And
It was the Stone show was great for us and our crew. Our guitar tech, he got to meet he called him the Keith Richards of guitar techs. And he's Keith Richards guitar tech. He's Keith Richards guitar tech. So,
no.
You know, the guy.
Like, that's funny.
The guy drilled our guy and, like, made him open up all his drawers and gave him shit about what he had in there. And why do you have those strings in that drawer? You should have them over here, and, like, looked at all our guitars. But, yeah, from the top down, like, it seemed like a great organization. So, it's pretty bizarre to be there.
Yeah.
That's sick. I mean, and what about working with Willie Nelson? I mean, that's got to be, on the other end of the spectrum, just amazingly cool.
Well, can you hear this?
Oh, I see what's happened.
You couldn't hear that, but yeah, there. Willie has helped us get our own. Marijuana merchandise. Well, Willie,
only in Colorado, though, right?
Right.
Well, it's only available in Colorado for now. But Willie Nelson has his own weed company, and we've been fortunate to put out our own collection with them, and we just released our first hash pen with them.
Wow.
And that's what I was kidding when I was like, listen to this, but you can't really hear it. It's pretty silent. You know?
Well, I heard a tightening of the lips.
I mean, besides the weed, it's been great.
I mean, Willie Nelson is the Keith Richards of weed, so Keith Richards of everything on this show.
Well, that is the thing, is Willie's, you know, he's the elder of so many, and he's still around doing it, and we felt super lucky. I mean, okay, so I'm from Fort Worth, or at least I got there when I was 16 from San Antonio.
Yep.
And I had always seen Willie Nelson do his 4th of July picnic in the Stockyards.
Mm-hmm.
And once I started playing with the Night Sweats, all of a sudden we did Farm Aid, and then we were doing these Outlaw Fests. And I can't tell you how many times it's been now. It's
amazing.
Over 10.
Yeah.
And there's no way to really know now, but we just keep getting to do it. And, you know, he canceled some shows coming up, but not the ones that we're doing, which is September 11th at Forest Hills in Queens, New York. Yep. And then
coming over here. Yep.
Yeah. And then Farm Aid.
In Wisconsin.
Which is in Wisconsin this year.
It's amazing.
But yeah, it for me, especially just being from Fort Worth, I am blown away every time, and I feel very lucky. And then also, because I'm in a band from Denver, there's the Willie's Reserve also.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you. Every time we have a musician on, we just had Bobby Rush on, who played with James Brown and played with, you know,
B.B. King.
You know, he just won a Grammy last year for his blues album.
Right on.
I'm very fascinated by, and people listening to this are probably sick of me asking this, but I'm going to ask it every time. I'm very fascinated by band's writing process and band's recording process. Now, with Nathaniel and the Night Sweats, how do you guys go about that? Now, like, does Nate write the songs? Do you guys collaborate? Are you brought in? Do you guys jam on things? What is your writing process when it comes to... Or if it was different, the first and second album or new stuff, what is your general, your vibe when it comes to making music?
I'm going to let Joseph answer that. But after that, I can tell you how some of the horn stuff has worked.
Okay.
But I kind of came in at the tail end of tearing at the seams.
Okay.
I went out to the recording studio twice, so. I'll let Joseph.
Yeah, sorry, that stuff fascinates me.
So, I haven't heard the podcast, so I'm not tired of the question yet.
Oh, good,
so.
good. Everybody else good is one. But you.
Great
so.
Question. You know, I've played with Nathaniel for what I like to say is 2 years shy. 2 years shy of a double baker's dozen. So you do the math.
So you've been around with him for a long time.
Yeah, and yeah. You know, there's been a lot of different projects we've done, but... But, you know, his voice is the voice of this band, and, yep. And he's the songwriter. But that's the thing. The first record was made on the side when we had kind of a more folk project going at the time. And it was just him and Patrick went out with him and our producer, Richard Swift. And they kind of recorded everything before the band was put together. And then we went on the road for, you know, the better part of 3 years touring that record. And we came back and made a record as a band where we went in. And Nathaniel still was, you know, the voice and the lyricist and all of that. But, you know, the process the second time around, the process that Jeff came in on that he mentioned for Tearing at the Seams was was much more a result of a bunch of people that had been playing a lot of shows together. Yeah. So, but I saw Nathaniel kind of rely on the band in a way that I hadn't seen before in our career of him writing. So, you know, it's become more collaborative. You know, I think that the more you play with a group of people, the more you allow yourself to be vulnerable and trust the people you're playing with in ways that hopefully make it the sum of the, you know, the sum of the parts is bigger than what it could have been.
Yep.
If it was just you on your own. So, and then Jeff, here you go.
I kind of came in right at the end, but it was almost in the same breath. Hey, would you like to be in the band, and also could you record on the record?
And do you like roller coasters?
And, yeah. you know, I gotta say, we've traveled around so much, and this band hits roller coasters.
I like it. This, I like it.
Yeah, this is my second time to this theme park with this band. It was 2 years ago. About 2 years ago, right?
2 years ago. Well, and I didn't come here. I did something else that day.
Yeah, yeah.
What you guys got to do is just figure out a tour where you can just play during the day at the theme parks and then just ride the coasters the rest of the night.
Well, yeah, we're thank you. We're on a fast track towards county fairs. I appreciate that. Vote of confidence.
Willie Nelson, the Night Sweats at the county fair tour.
You know what's funny though? We were just talking about earlier how as kids, and by kids I mean like middle school, high school, Joseph and I had seen bands, but they were Christian bands at Six Flags and stuff like that.
Break the mold, guys. Break the mold.
I was like, I saw the Beach Boys at SeaWorld. You know?
I saw them at Six Flags once.
Yeah. I was like, I had my binoculars out in the lawn, and I was like, that's Uncle Jesse on drums.
Oh, the Kokomo years. The Kokomo years, yep.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, back to the horns.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's all relative. The horns, he brought me in and then kind of asked if I knew a trumpet player, and we just kind of we just jumped in there, and we didn't have very much time. It was amazing. We were laughing at the end because there were songs that there were, you know, we were gonna put some horns on, but there just was no more time.
Literally ran out of time.
Like the songs Say It Louder.
Yep.
You know, we do a bunch of horn stuff on it live, but there's no horns on the record. And it was just because it was at the tail end. And I look at it now and I feel so fortunate that I got to work with Richard Swift.
Right. Yep.
And, you know, his vibe was amazing. And so not only getting on this record and getting to play on most of the songs on it, but working with Richard and the horns, like, we had a great time. I mean, that was pretty fun.
Everybody had a great time. It was funny, the first part of the session, though, it was like 3 weeks in the middle of nowhere, Oregon. And the horns, you guys didn't really have a lot to do for a couple days there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Nobody knew what we were doing yet. You know, it was kind of all still falling into place, and there was a lot of kind of standing around at first. But then it found its groove, and then we ran out of time.
Yeah. Actually, the first night I got in there, they were Mark or Luke or somebody was redoing some part of a song just to kind of wrap up their session, and we were like, oh man, let's make a beer run. And then I looked over and I saw Richard Swift had a weed apple that was in a very bad way. Like, it was, you know, it was its time to go. And
okay.
And I was like, hey man, I'm gonna get us a new apple. And he was like, you man, and he pointed at me, and we immediately hit it off.
He recently smoked out of apples, didn't he?
He and I were both really into smoking out of apples, even when you might have a pipe or something. But not to make this all about weed.
Oh,
anything,
no,
but,
no.
Or apples, you know.
For real. We do work for the Apple lobby.
It would be more it would be more weird if you just made it all about Apple.
Yeah. Yeah.
been talking about Macintosh for about 40 minutes.
I've been trying to ask him about tearing at the seams, but these guys love Granny Smiths, man.
Oh, yeah. You know, we used to call them jazz apples, but now they actually make a thing called a jazz apple.
Right, just so you can't call it that. Yeah.
Good name like for a song. Good name for a song. Jazz apple.
Jazz apple. I mean, after, you know, after like 400 or 500 shows with this band and realizing I wasn't paying houses anymore, I was standing in the backyard of the house that I now own somehow. And I have an apple tree back there. And I've owned it for 2 years right now. So last year at the end of the summer, I think I texted you, Jeff, after I did this, but I reached up into my tree and I picked an apple and then I smoked weed out of the apple I picked out of the tree in my backyard. And I said, God damn it. Life is good.
That was written on the Statue of Liberty, I'm pretty sure.
I think it's the section that kind of got like, you know, ionized in the in the storms. It's just a little blurry, you know.
When you guys are at a concert, let me ask you, which member of the band is more into like a controlled set, as in like, oh, these are the songs we're going to play in this order, and this is what we're going to do, and who's more like the wildcat that's just like, I'm going to do a 20-minute solo tonight, what the hell?
Well, everything, you know, Nathaniel is usually kind of the wild card, and it's not that things will get extended or stretched out real right. far or anything, but he'll like, we have inner monitors. He'll just step back into one of those little stage mics by the drum kit and be like, let's do this song. And we'll just go into that.
Nice.
But besides that, yeah, we pretty much stick to the set list. We'll just add things if we need to, you know, play a little bit longer or cut things if it just feels like that's not the vibe of the audience or whatever.
Well, you know? I did notice recently we played with somebody who's known to be a really good guitarist. And so there was one song where Nathaniel has a solo that's built into the song. But do you notice in Shake, he played it like 3 times as long as he was supposed to.
Oh.
He just wanted to play his fucking guitar.
This Gary guy, huh?
I don't know what you're talking about.
some Gary guy, you know?
Yeah.
That you picked out of the crowd, right?
It was good fun, and you know what? You're right. That was the longest I've ever seen Nathaniel
just really
extend a song, in. Which was cool because that song kind of calls for it.
That's pretty cool, man. Before we let you guys go and smoke out of apples and ride roller coasters and stuff like that, let me ask you, like, you guys are both in this majorly successful band. You're both super talented. But what do you guys do individually on your own as far as music-wise, writing your own music or doing your, you know, solo things? I know every musician's always got something else going on. Individually, what do you each do on the side?
So I have a hard time sitting still, apparently. I love being able to be in the same place or same city as any of my friends that are playing music that I've played with before.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes new experiences.
Should we talk about jam?
Even last night, it was Nicole Atkins, Nathaniel, and then Gary. And I had played and recorded with both Nicole and Gary. So I ended up playing a couple songs with Nicole, then the whole set with Nathaniel, of course, and then one song with Gary.
Sweet.
And it's so much fun that I kind of can't help it. So when I get off tour, these guys know, like, I kind of stay on tour, so to speak.
Right.
But I really am looking forward to the new year and working on a solo record for myself to just kind of get that monkey off my back.
Of course.
And
yeah.
have a good time and do some collaborations like I've been doing for years now and just see what happens. But yeah, the Night Sweats are my main squeeze. That's awesome. You know what I mean?
Yep. For sure.
Yeah.
Daisy's greatest sense.
But
I mean, you know, we all write and we all do various different things, and we all came from other bands, you know. Nathaniel and I, like I said, have been playing together forever, but Patrick, our drummer, has been with us in the previous band, but we've, you know, he writes and records a bunch of music. He's got a studio. We're all just, I think we're all still really curious, and we're all still exploring lots of different things. My wife was in the band we had before, and she has a project now, so when I go home, I'm basically, what I do when I go home is I try to help her, like, I'm like, try to be her roadie and like carry gear.
That's kind of cool.
Drive the van and take care of the kids and you know, like, get her out there to do shit.
Yeah, so. The band Blue Book is what it's talking about.
Blue Book.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's like avant garde weirdness. It's really amazing. But, you know, like, there's, like Jeff said, it's like we got ants in our pants. We just can't stop moving, you know?
I think that's part of being an artist, though. I think doing your solo stuff makes you love also coming, you know, coming back together with your guys, you know what I mean? I think that's just part of being an artist.
I mean, it's also that sense of urgency when you know you're going to die. You just want to kind of do as much as you can while you're here.
Yeah, well, keep smoking, you know, like, keep smoking apple weed. That might come sooner.
Right. Yeah. They have some scary roller coasters out here, man. I'm telling you.
And I lost an apple on that roller coaster. It flew right out of my hand.
Jeff and Joseph, it's been really cool. I mean, Joe, thanks for sitting down with us in the middle of doing whatever.
Sorry to crash your party.
No. I mean, crash it anytime you want. It's a real pleasure to talk to you. I just want to say your band is in my playlist every single day. A Little Honey is my wife and I's wedding song.
Nice.
So I
good one.
Yeah. So it's one of my favorites, if not my favorite. You guys are making amazing music. You're doing great things, and I really wish you the best of luck with just whatever you got next, whether it's solo, whether it's with the Night Sweats, whether it's family life. And thank you guys for joining me.
Yeah, man. Thank you very much. It was nice talking with y'all. Thanks for having us.
Well, that was pretty damn sweet.
I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty tight on my scheduling and everything. I don't appreciate somebody just knocking on the door and trying to get into this show. I mean,
oh, so you didn't like that they didn't have Verbal Shenanigans clearance? Like, we didn't clear? Yeah. We didn't vet them?
Yeah. They didn't call our receptionist. They didn't say, hey, Sally, is it cool if he comes in and joins in on the podcast? I mean, it was just total anarchy. I mean, great interview, but I'm severely upset with them.
You don't like change. You don't like things being sprung upon you, right? So
yeah, you know what, Scott? I hate to do this. I'm going to throw my authority around any member of the Night Sweats banned from the next any Verbal Shenanigans in the future until I receive an official apology for not calling our receptionist. And don't give me the crap about you don't have one. I mean, I've heard that plenty of times, and I haven't met her yet, but I'm sure she's somewhere, and she would give us a note.
Here's what I'll do for you, Mike. I'll go back when we edit this and put this out, and I will edit out everything, anything Joseph Pope said. I will put it like a tone, like a boop.
We do not condone the comments of this gentleman.
They were not vetted properly through the Verbal Shenanigans HR office. But yeah, what a cool, that was really cool that he just, you know, we got two Night Sweats, not one, but we got two.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool stuff. And go check them out. I know they're playing, when this comes out, they're playing with Willie Nelson in Forest Hill Stadium in New York. So if anybody's around, go check them out. And you get to see Willie Nelson, which is pretty fantastic, too. So
that's great. I mean, we talked to Bob Rush, and they're touring with Willie Nelson. It's just amazing how when these musicians get up to an age, they don't sit back and get sick of it. They're like, no let's keep going. Chucking.
They're performers, right? It is them, right? Like, that's who they are. And I feel like, you know, when you see older people give up something like that, they like give up a big chunk of them, and they're just, you know, that's their purpose. Like, Willie Nelson's been doing this for what, 70 years, probably?
Oh, easily. And he just doesn't skip a beat. He's still got his voice. I mean, that's a key thing. I remember I went to like a Six Flags concert, and I forget the band's name, but the ones that do like Walk Like a Man and Sherry.
Oh God.
Was that Frankie Valli's?
Yeah, yeah, probably.
Yeah. They're still touring, but Frankie, he can't hit them crucial notes. Like the one you go to the song to listen for. And every time it's like this, he would come up to like the hook and just be like, everybody, and just point the microphone out to the crowd. It's like, no, if you're still going, you got to hit that note.
Yeah. when I used to work at the TV station, we filmed a lot of concerts for the town. Like they would have Monday free concerts, and a lot of these a lot of these doo-wop bands would come, and they were all the same. They would be like living off of like one guy's name from 50 years ago, and they got all new members and maybe like one original member, and it was just brutal. Like once you do one doo-wop concert, you've done all of them. They're all the exact same thing, and it's like, oh my God. And they all have names like The Mystics, The Temptation. Like they'll just use anybody. I think even Frankie Valli, I think his brother, it was something else Valli, was Tori. Like it was just it was sad, man. Sad. But yeah, the Four Seasons.
Maybe you brought up a good point. Maybe this is our money grab, like new age doo-wop. Like 2019 doo-wop. We did. Maybe that's what's missing in this world, Scotty, that we could fill that void.
Here's the problem. I don't think me or you could sing any doo-wop.
Well, I mean, we got the idea. We got half the problem done. That other half we'll have to work on.
So doo-wop with like a lot of auto-tune, maybe?
I don't know. No, I mean, we'll have to get like matching red tuxedos. I'm assuming that would be the 2019 look.
We should focus on the look first, and then kind of go backwards.
Yeah, well, let's take care of every other least important thing except for the singing, and then we'll figure out near the end.
All right, I'm in.
Like our first concert will just be looking at each other like, I ain't singing.
You go.
I ain't singing.
You go.
I mean, they're pretty pumped. Maybe we get Joe Fernandez out here.
We could always just lip sing. That's fine. A lot of artists do that now anyway. So, I mean, think about like, you know, even comics. You see, you know, like Don Rickles was doing comedy up until till his day. He was doing it in a chair. Bill Cosby, you know, obviously he's a monster, but he was doing comedy sitting down. You know, like a lot of these performers, that's what they do. And once they lose that, it seems like, you know, they're gone. The spark is gone, and then that's when they seem to start failing. Bob Dylan's still playing. It's crazy. So,
you think Cosby's still working on his comedy where he's at?
You think?
I mean, he's got plenty of time, and I don't want to, you know, degrade what he did to women. Don't get me wrong, but I'm almost curious if he's in this. And it tells, oh,
you think he's going around to like other black inmates telling them not to use certain language and trying to still be like this moral authority to them, you know?
And then I bought the Little Rascals and kept it myself.
You ever hear like he used to, Eddie Murphy was talking about it on Comedians in Cars, like Cosby used to tell him like, you're being too dirty, you're not, you know, you're setting a bad example. And meanwhile, this guy is like raping dozens of women behind the scenes, you know? It's like it's so pathetic.
Scott, sorry to interrupt you, but breaking verbal shenanigans news. Antonio Brown has been released by the Oakland Raiders.
He's going to be a good Patriot. Oh, man.
Belichick is Gordon and Brown. Oh, my God.
Imagine you get, you know, maybe you can get 8 games out of each guy, and you got to, you know, that's a full season. So, but
Brady's going to join that list in his 80s and all throwing checkdowns and winning Super Bowls.
Would not be surprised if we hear later on today, the Patriots have signed Antonio Brown to a 1-year deal. And he goes off because Belichick will just,
I think when you release him, I think it's kind of like baseball where every team has a right to claim him.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure if that's 100% how it works, and it goes by, like, the worst record. So I just want to say, somebody lock up Dan Snyder right now.
Hey, I don't have
just tell him somebody's trying to steal something from his billion-dollar yacht. Keep him occupied until some other sucker picks up Antonio Brown.
Hey, if it's a one-year deal, I don't know. Eli could use someone to throw to. He'll never come to the Giants, but, you know, no. We got rid of one diva. We'll take on another. Why not? But yeah, I guess so one of the reasons my ankle was really hurting the other day in that dress shoe was because my uncle had passed away earlier this week, so basically it was like a mixed emotion kind of thing. Like, my uncle was my godfather, but my uncle, he never had a the last 25 years of his life were not easy, that's for sure. He, about 13 years ago, he had a massive stroke, and he was also on the floor, and no one found him for like over 24 hours. So nowadays they have like medication, like they almost have like Narcan for stroke. Like, it's like a quick acting thing that almost can delay the effects of a stroke, which is pretty amazing. But so he had been in the nursing home for 13 years. And I don't know if you ever had anybody in a nursing home at that level. It is beyond depressing. It is. I think we've talked about this at some point on the podcast, but it is like you walk through and these poor old people. Or now, when my uncle had a stroke, he was only 56, I think. So he's much younger than a lot of these, you know, very depressing. And they're just basically sitting in front of televisions, and that's kind of it. And, you know, they tried the rehab with him and the speech therapy, and nothing really took. So really, for the last 13 years, he has not been living. Like, that is no kind of life. You know, even when my grandmother was alive, and, you know, this was her son, she would be like, you know, it was probably better off if he had passed. So it was kind of one of those bittersweet things, but I wasn't really – I'm not trying to get into all that. One thing I was – my mother had asked me to do the eulogy. And I didn't really want to do it, honestly. I did a eulogy before for my grandmother, but my grandmother's life had an arc, you know, like a story. Like, she lived a long life, you know. She got sick, like a lot of people do, towards the end of her life. But she had, you know, it was a lot easier to speak about her. It's very hard to eulogize someone who the last 20 years of life, you know, he's had a lot of problems with addiction, like alcohol addiction before that, and he got clean, and then, you know, he got divorced from his wife, and then this happened. So, like, the last 20 years are not, like, a very shiny thing to talk about. So,
yeah. I mean, you got to nitpick with when you go up there. And did you give somebody your credits to introduce you coming up to the stage?
Well, this is exactly what I... Because in my family now, I've become like, I don't know. Anytime there's any kind of speech, I always have to do it. Like, they wanted me to speak at my sister's wedding. I did my brother's best man speech. I did the eulogy for my grandmother. And I think they think because maybe I do comedy and I I talk for a while, that that is just easy. But it's not. And I got to say, I was 100 times more nervous writing this eulogy than I was like going up in front of 200 people and trying jokes. You know, it was you want to hit the right spots, but I also didn't want it to be completely dark and gray. So there I am for two straight days. I was like, yeah, I guess. She's like, you don't have to do it. But I'm like, is there anyone else that will do it? And she's like, no, I don't think so. I'm like, how do I say no to my mother? You know, how do I say no?
Yeah.
So I was just at night, just I could not sleep. I would get up and like I typed it in my phone, like, and then I would delete a bunch of things, copy, delete, 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 type, delete, like just over and over and over again. And I'm just like afraid. I'm like, I don't want to bomb doing a eulogy. That is like, you know what that's like at a repast? Like everybody having, you know, mourning and like looking at you like, what the hell was that you just did up there?
Man, I came in here depressed, and somehow you made me more depressed. Mm-hmm. Good work, my friend.
You should stick to comedy, maybe, because that was terrible.
Yeah, you did a Chappelle Netflix eulogy tonight, my friend.
So I think I did a good job. I won't really get too much into it, but I basically focused on – I started the eulogy talking about how I was going to reach for my black suit that I wear for every funeral and whatnot. And I went to put it on, and I looked, and I saw my blue suit, and I was like, well, you know what? I said, my uncle basically, had enough darkness in his life. I said, today I want to celebrate the colors. So I decided to wear color, and I kind of talked about the positive things. I even made a joke in there. He's a Ranger fan. He was a Ranger fan. I'm a diehard Devil fan. We used to always, when we were younger, he'd always make fun of it. We'd always go back and forth, and I even said today, I said at the mass, I said, we used to battle over his lowly Rangers and my superior Devils. Who's better? And I said, I know we're in a church right now, but even Father Dave over here knows the true answer is the devil. That went over. He laughed. The priest laughed. And I'm like, sorry, Bob, which is my uncle. I had to get one last dig in there, But I put a couple of little jokes in there. I really did not want it to be this deep, heavy, dark thing. So it went well. I got a lot of compliments on it. But, man, was that stressful.
Yeah, I got told by my dad, he announced it to the family. I'm doing his eulogy, so.
Oh, wow. So you got a lot.
Fingers crossed I got some time to get material ready.
You just start following your
death, Dad. What? I got 20 to do? Next week?
You just start following him around with a notebook, like every time. Like, what'd you say? Oh, that was funny. That was good. Wait, say that again. Let me. But yeah, it was. All in all, I think overall, it once the fog clears and my mom accepts it, I think in the end it is for the better, because I know if I was ever in that position, I would not want to be here. And the burden that puts on a family, like my mom went every week, at least once a week for 13 straight years, and taking care of his affairs and getting his money in order and getting clothes and washing clothes. Like, it's a lot, man. And you really find out who in your family, who really cares when there's a tragedy or someone's sick. That's when you really find out who is, who really cares. That's for sure.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's basically the equivalent of retaking care of a child. Mm-hmm. With no offense with anybody, but it's, the ones that show up, who do it out of respect, who actually want to see them and, keep on praying that things get better, not for the sake of, because my life will get better, but actually wants to see them
right,
have a good life and leave with dignity. I mean, those are the ones that cares. I mean, that's when you really understand who really loved you and who didn't.
Yeah. And it's like, in the end, I think it will be a relief to her. She keeps saying, I'm feeling very blah today. I'm like, Mom, you're allowed to feel, you got to grieve yourself. Like, you just lost your brother. Like, you shouldn't feel guilty about feeling upset. I said, you got to grieve on your own terms. Don't worry about it. Like, kind of lean into the feelings rather than try to put up a wall, But one last thing on that. My uncle was not like a very patient guy, and he also liked to joke around a lot, and he was very sarcastic. So in my and he went out of this world with one last joke, that's for sure. He we go to the funeral, the service, and then we go to the cemetery to bury him, and kind of, we get there, and when you go to a funeral, there's like the tent there by the graves, and everybody kind of, they have little chairs for a couple people, and you stand around, and like the priest says one last thing, and it's quick usually. So we're all gathering around, and my uncle, who is his brother, goes, I don't think this is the right grave. Like, I don't think this is the right plot that we picked at, like, that he had, and he's like, and the funeral director's like, really? And he's like checking his paperwork, and he's like, oh, I don't know. I'll straighten this out. Let's just do the service here. And then when you guys leave, we'll make sure we put the right Stone. So,
did they lower him?
No,
like,
no.
Into the, because I was about to say that'd be so awkward. All right, just put him down halfway. Because I'm not going to bring them all the way back up if we find out somebody did bad paperwork.
Yeah, and like, the last couple funerals I went to, I don't think they do the lowering anymore, like, while you're there. I think usually put like, they like have the flowers out, they say a prayer, and then they say, please go to your cars. And the repast is at this time. But I was like, that is typical of my uncle. He would have totally been laughing at that. Another thing, he was in the army, so they had two military guys come, and it was a man and a woman, and you know they draped the flag over and folded, and they gave it to my mother. But they played taps, right? So she has a bugle, and I'm looking, I'm like, something's off here, something's off. They're not playing taps. So I look, and she's standing there with the bugle, right? But the music's coming out of a speaker. So she wasn't actually playing the horn. The
what?
Yeah. Yeah. So.
There's horn lip syncing?
Yes. What? Yeah. And I'm sitting there in my head laughing. Like, that old laugh at a funeral thing. I'm sitting there laughing like, are you kidding me? They just do I'd rather them just stand at attention and play taps through a speaker, yeah. And that's fine, you know? But the fake holding the horn up, I was like, this is hysterical. Like, this is what it's come to.
I would call him out and be like, yo, you don't Milli Vanilli at Uncle Bob's funeral. You understand me? My Uncle Bob. You don't know what it sounds like. You pretend you know what it sounds like.
I think during basic training or boot camp, everyone should have to play taps, you know? Like, so that, because that's something that's going at a, you know, you don't see a lot of people able to play the bugle anymore. Imagine you gotta like.
You've heard it enough times. I figure you can fake it.
Oh, they faked it all right. They faked it, but I don't know. Those kind of things are pretty. I don't know. He would have laughed at it. I know that. So there was a couple other weird things too. Like he, you know, like for a wake, like you usually put pictures up, you know, and you put pictures all around and whatnot. And my mom was like, oh, I don't know, you know, I don't know where a lot of the pictures were. And she's like, I know I took a bag out of the attic like 3 days ago because I was looking for something. I think there's like a picture of him in there. So I go and check. I'm like, oh, I'll go check it out. And I go on the downstairs and I grab this bag. And there's the one picture she's talking about. But then underneath it, there's like two dozen, like 30 pictures of him. I'm like, that's weird. Like this bag was in the attic for God knows how long. And just like 2 days ago, they bring it down. Then there was another strange thing. His ex-wife. Who we always loved. It wasn't like they got divorced and we hated her kind of thing. He actually kind of messed it up back in the day. With some, so she moved to Florida, remarried years and years and years ago. So my mom called her to tell her, you know, that he had passed away, and she happened to be in New Jersey, and she was like, "Oh, I'm in New Jersey. I'm going to come, you know, come to the wake and the funeral tomorrow." So it's just. Really strange, like a couple weird things like that, man. And my sister, who I think I mentioned this before, my sister is always like, if there was like a clairvoyant in our family, it would be her. Like she always has these weird, I don't know, she has a weird memory of things. She says she remembers dates, and she's just more, if there was someone who was like a medium or could speak to whatever, it would be her in the family. And she's like, oh, this is so weird. I had this dream that someone in our family died on September 6th or something like that. I'm like, well, I hope that's not the case because today's the funeral. But she was like, you know, she was 2 days off, which is kind of weird too. So I don't know. It's just a lot of little strange things. I don't know, in the ethos, in the atmosphere. So.
Maybe that's the meaning of life. Like when before you go to the afterlife, God is like, you know what? I'm gonna let you do three weird things before I bring you off of Earth. And it's like you can't do anything specific. Like you can't go to your ex-wife and say I always loved you,
right?
But you can at least have her in the same state.
Weird. Like
just have her taxi take a weird route home.
Weird stuff, man. Weird stuff. All I know is like, I don't know, man. I want my funeral to be. A party. Like I want like I don't know, like I think old school wakes, like the way like the Europeans did it, like where it was in your house, in some ways might have been like better because people are like drinking and eating, and it's not like this sad sit in a room. Like funeral homes have not changed ever. They still just look and smell and exactly the same. Exactly the same. There's that. But it's really interesting that, you know, I remember back when my grandparents died, wakes used to be 2 days and two times in that day. So it would be like 2 to 4, 7 to 9, 2 to 4, 7 to 9. And then the funeral, it was like a 3 day affair. It's just too long, man. It's just too long. Mm-hmm. Like I want like a tap handle at my casket. Like Burley, you come see me, you fill up a beer. Okay. Then there's a glass in my hand. You clink it with me and you take like,
okay.
That's how you pay respects to me. Like I don't want this just people grieving and looking at me. I don't know, man. I don't know.
I just ask that you don't have the hors d'oeuvres on you. That being like a little awkward.
I'm
really hungry, but I don't know about this.
Like one of those Asian ladies that they serve sushi on. Yeah, so that was my week. But Burl, I guess before we get out of here, I have a request of you.
Sure. Anything.
We've read two of your amazing pieces. Now let's preface this for the audience here. We have had Burl found that what grade was it? Fifth grade?
I believe it's a fourth or fifth grade a storybook that I wrote.
Burl found this book of all original stories written by himself, and it's a good way to close out the show. Now we have read about Blackie the bird that he feeds fat and yep. seeds or something like that. We learned about McMillan Island, I think it was called.
Yep.
So yep. You got to go back and listen to those. But I always try to – we've been hearing some amazing pieces by Mike, and we've been trying to figure out what the hell he was talking about so many years ago. So, Burlow, I think this is a good episode for us to go out on with a story from you.
All right. I will give you three options of story names, Scott.
Okay.
We could talk about Our Day in the Forest. We can do Polar Bear Mania.
Oh, God.
Or we can do Lost in Space.
Okay. This is a no-brainer. Number one sounded enticing, but once Polar Bear Mania came out, impossible to turn down. Impossible. Also, by the way, how many stories do you think are in there? Like, how much life do we have in this bit?
Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
All right. So we at least
9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14.
So we have at least a couple more episodes we can get out of this. Good.
15 in total.
All right. Perfect. Like. So when we don't plan any content, that's a good thing we can go to. Polar Bear Mania.
Yep, and I'm going to preface this that I did not pre-read it, so I'm going to be as surprised as you are when we get to stuff. Polar Bear Mania. Johnny Campbell got up one morning and started heading to the kitchen. It was a cold winter day, and it was snowing for 24 hours.
Ooh, good description words. I'm in. Good setting. Yeah. You're establishing the setting.
Johnny decided to look out the window to see how high the snow was when all of a sudden a white polar bear was looking him in the eye.
Whoa.
And he almost fainted. He ran away from the window and said, "I think I need my glasses." Then the polar bear roared and Johnny knew he wasn't imagining it. When he looked out the window again, the bear was trying to climb in the neighbor's pool.
With all the snow?
Apparently so. Yeah. Johnny ran and got his coat and some fish from the refrigerator.
Some fish?
And went outside.
Oh, good.
He waved the fish and the bear came running. Johnny made the bear do tricks like rolling over in the snow and also to dance on his hind legs before he gave up the fish to eat.
I'm noticing a theme in a lot of your writing. The theme is like luring animals in and making them do things with food and treats.
Yeah, yeah, I'm noticing that. I'm noticing that. Johnny and the bear became friends, and Johnny named the bear Snowball. Every day, Snowball would wait for Johnny to come out and play. They would play fun things like snowball fights, sliding on the frozen ice, and ice fishing. Snowball's favorite was ice fishing because Johnny caught the fish and he got to eat it. When the winter disappeared, so did Snowball, but always came back. The end.
Wow. I think this was your masterpiece here. It had a beginning, it had a middle, it had an end.
Mm. I don't know. I'm still hanging on my friend Blackie. I gotta be honest.
You every time you write, you are definitely the main character. You might have named him Joey Campbell, but we all know
Johnny Campbell.
Johnny Campbell. We all know that's Mike Berlew living out some fantasy.
If you hear about a guy who got mauled at the Atlanta Zoo waving fish at a polar bear, you know it was me. Yep. And then Scott's got to do my eulogy. So.
I got you, buddy. I got you. Well, another, like I said, two out of your three stories now have been luring animals with treats and making them do tricks.
I have a feeling this won't be the last. I got a feeling, knowing me.
Well, your third story, Berlew, Polar Bear Mania, is a good one. So congrats.
Polar Bear Mania!
Good job today. Berlew, anything to promote before we get the hell out of here?
I guess I'll just promote my pages. We're getting closer to October and pumpkin spice, whatever. It's on my site on Facebook, facebook.com/dubberls721, or you can look it up as Michael Berlew Random Stuff. Another year of 31 days of pumpkin spice flavored items, starting on October 1st with the infamous pumpkin spice spam that we will be trying. Me and my wife will be going through, we'll be doing a little traveling, so some will be at different sites. So check it out. It's always fun. I have kind of a growing audience, not in the sense of bragging, but people actually have messaged me asking me, hey, are you still going to do it this year? So it's kind of cool. And hope you all enjoy it. That's facebook.com/dubberls721.
All right. And I will promote our so we've been doing shows at Tap House 15 in Jefferson now for 3 years. 3 years of shows. Show number 36 coming up, our 3-year anniversary, on September 26th. It is free again. And it is a killer show. You guys should come on out. It's probably the last show before we actually expand the size of the room. And the lineup is ridiculous. Headliner, Bob Levy from the Howard Stern Show, from Opie and Anthony. And then we got our good friend Joe Conti, Sharon Simon, and Matt Jenkins, and myself. So come on out. I already know it's almost completely reserved. So there are some tickets, seats left, I guess you can say. It's been a ridiculously successful run over there. Come on out. Check it out one night. And I guess with that, guys, we're going to head out of here. Please subscribe to us on iTunes if you like what you heard today. Hey, if you didn't like what you heard, give us a subscription anyway. It really boosts our ego. And most importantly, two things. Share a review on iTunes really helps it get populated. And the second thing is most important, share the show on your social media. Hey, we really like these guys. Hey, I really like the Night Sweats. I really love Nathaniel Rateliff. Here's two of his amazing musicians that also joined the show in this funny interview. Hear what they did with an apple. See, that would be like a great a great tagline that you could get someone interested in our show. And we will be
thankful. Just name it Polar Bear Mania. It always works.
Polar bears and the Night Sweats. But guys, that's it, man. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Bye-bye.
Find a way to cross and you're gonna get there. And I'm on fire today. Ain't no water here to calm or even put me off. I find a better way. Am I crazy?